Saturday morning to you. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota by Mary Meyer. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. My gosh, I think it's summer already. Wow.
Instant summer. And boy, did it feel like it yesterday. Fortunately, I guess, it wasn't humid and hasn't been. But I tell you, much loved rain, and you and I and our colleagues have for months talked about dormant seating. By golly, it worked.
Yes, it worked this year. We're certainly glad to see some moisture and warm weather. So as gardeners, it's, should we plant everything we've got already, or should we go get more plants at the plant sales and garden centers? So a lot to do if you're a gardener.
Yeah, I'm tempted to get out there today to get some tomatoes and peppers going, but are you going to tell me wait a week or so?
No, I think it's okay to put in your warm season crops.
Good.
Now. We've had enough warm weather. I think the soil is warm enough. And yes, so I think you can plant almost anything now. Yep.
Good. That's good news. Yeah. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and if you are a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get and rapidly filled up with questions. We'd love to hear from you either by phone or by text. Your questions for Mary at 651-461-9226. Here's one that came in a bit ago, Mary. And I remember the questions 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were told, Texter says, we should not be using weed and feed. What should we be doing to control the broadleaf weeds right now?
You can use a weed killer. Depending on how many weeds you have, the temperature has to be right, and it depends on what the product is and the formulation that you have. So you have to really read the label on the bag and determine if there's a temperature requirement for that. So I think the confusion can be also if you're using fertilizer and a weed killer, because most of our turf professors will say less fertilizer in the spring, more fertilizer in the fall. So if you have a lot of weeds, spring is a good time for controlling weeds. It's not necessarily the best time to be using fertilizer.
All right, good point. This next text might be a good, you may have some idea, but it might be a good candidate for the University of Minnesota website. Good morning, Texter says, looking for some ideas for a landscape that faces southwest but has tilted light, so shaded but hot afternoon sun when it does come through. What do you think of that? I know you get asked questions like that all the time.
Right. Yeah. So the limited light and then the southwest exposure, it sounds more like dry but light shade. So there are a number of plants that will work for that. Some of the geraniums or perennial geraniums that will work in lower light conditions. Some of the tougher ground covers like vinca will work in a situation like that. But yes, you're right. We have a lot of recommendations on the extension.umn.edu. website where you can get ideas for that. And so I would also think about some of the native wildflowers that you find along the edges. There's a Canada anemone that's a very vigorous plant, but you see that in right at the edge of wooded conditions where it's dry. So there are plants that will work. Yep.
All right, great. This listener, Mary, has several oak trees with some dead branches. The texter says, I want to trim these dead branches. I'm concerned about oak leaf wilt. Could I cut these dead branches off if I paint the cuts with pruning sealer?
Well, we really don't recommend any pruning now on oaks. This is when the oak wilt can be transmitted by insects, so it's really a risk. And if the branches are truly dead and you're making the cuts, the insects won't be so attracted to dead wood. But at some point, you're going to hit back where there is live wood and dead. So I would do nothing now. I don't think many arborists are going to be out pruning oaks at this time of year. So the best thing is to wait until the tree is really dormant. Denny, are you there? I can't hear you anymore.
Mary, Danny? I think he disconnected. I think he's trying to connect.
Oh, gosh. We could talk about oak wilt further. That's one of the few plants this time of year really you shouldn't be pruning. Many of our other plants you can still prune, but oaks really, we've had more oak wilt in the area, and although oaks are one of our wonderful plants to grow in our landscapes, and I still plant oaks, they do have a serious issue with oak wilt, so managing them is really critical.
Before we take a break, Mary, wanted to do a shout-out here for the Washington County Extension Master Gardeners having their plant sale today.
Yes.
10 till 3 at the Washington County Fairgrounds. So it's a great day for that. So get out there.
Yes. Hennepin County Master Gardeners are also having their plant sale today. That's in Hopkins. In Hopkins, yes. So Teresa, who's often on the show doing the Smart Garden Show, I am sure she's over there at the Hopkins Pavilion giving advice for folks on plants.
Excellent, and a perfect day for it, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it is.
Before we break, let me ask you this this text coming in. My lilacs are blooming. Too early?
No, this is a beautiful year for lilacs. Gosh, they're
coming in. My lilacs are blooming. Too early?
No, this is a beautiful year for lilacs. Gosh, they are really gorgeous, fabulous display out at the Arboretum. But the early forms come in now, and then if you plant different species and cultivars of lilacs, you can have lilacs bloom for about 6 weeks. So I have some that are just really in buds and won't bloom for another 2 or 3 weeks. But yes, it's not too early. It's wonderful to enjoy the lilacs.
Excellent. Let's take this quick break, Mary. Be right back with more Smart Garden. Call us or text us with your lawn or garden question at 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, talking lawns and gardens. This morning, Mary Meyer from the U of M answering those questions via text or phone. Just call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Mary, speaking of phone calls, let's grab one. Richard, calling in from Pine City, I believe, this morning. Richard, what is your question for Mary?
Well, I kind of got up one day and decided to plant an indoor fruit tree. Now I'm in Pine City, Minnesota, as you said, and I have a big southern window that faces due south. The plant will be right in front of it, if and when. And I would like to know what tree will bear fruit, and what will be the easiest to grow. And I guess I'd like to start the tree at 3 feet, not get it more than 5 feet tall.
Well, many people in Minnesota can grow citrus indoors, believe it or not. Yes, lemons. The Meyer lemon, which is not related to me at all, but is one of the sweeter lemons, limes, and then calamondin oranges can be grown as citrus in Minnesota. Most people do put these trees outside in the summertime, but the citrus doesn't need a dormant period. So many of our other fruits like apples, plums, pears, these have to have a dormant period. So that's a difficult thing to mimic, the dormant period that happens in the winter time. So you can get citrus plants. I know Bachman's and some of the other garden centers will have citrus plants for sale, especially the Meyer lemon. So my first choice would be a Meyer lemon. These plants do not get very tall. They are three to five feet eventually, but they're often just 2 feet tall, and they can easily bear lemons for you. Good luck.
Great idea. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Richard. This texter planted 4 broccoli and 4 cauliflower plants last week. Now some of the leaves have turned orange. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that's the adjustment to the plant getting used to outdoor conditions compared to in the greenhouse where it was growing. So that's just the normal acclimatization of the plants. Sometimes when it's cooler outside than it was in the greenhouse, you'll see red, orange colors in those early transplants. But plants should grow out of it. One way you can prevent that or minimize it is if you use a row cover, the light mesh, usually white row cover material that you can buy. It's like putting a tiny sheet over top of your early transplants. This will help avoid the shock of going outside, and with the brassicas like broccoli and cauliflower, it minimizes the flea beetle damage that these young transplants can often get. But most of the time they grow out of it, and within 10 days or so, they'll look better.
All right. Here's one. My husband has promised to remake my vegetable garden for 2 years now. It may not get done until midsummer. What could I plant, texter wants to know, later in the season as far as vegetables?
Green beans are a pretty short crop, so you can usually plant those later. Amazingly, too, if you plant zucchini or summer squash, like about the 15th of June, the 20th of June, you can often get a crop of those and those squash, and you can avoid the squash vine borer, which will have passed through its first life cycle by that time. Many of the greens like kale, spinach, lettuce, etc., those are short crops and you can get those. The trick kind of is later in the year, it's hard to get those young plants from the garden center. So you might get some seed, start the plants yourself, but even putting the seed out with kale and lettuce, that will work later in the summer.
All right, great. Let's see. This texter says, I have a good-sized concrete planter at my front door, typical New Hope home, and I've had a lot of trouble getting annual flowers to thrive there. Any green, quote, filler-type plant does great, but not flowers. This has been the past 5 years or so. They rot at the dirt level or just shrivel up. Any ideas? I even tried leaving the flowers in plastic pots, sinking them, and they still died.
Wow, that's kind of unusual. So I would say there's something going on with that soil or the planter itself. So there definitely should be holes in the bottom of this. If there are no holes in the bottom, that's a problem. So you need to, the water needs to drain out of it. It sounds like it's just really too wet in there. The other thing, depending on the size of this, is if you can reuse the soil in these planters, especially if they're big, but you might want to take the soil out totally in the spring. And that helps to aerate it and keep the compaction from getting so bad. So with big planters, I try to dump them out, mix up the soil. You can put it back in again, but you want to make sure you've got good drainage. It sounds to me like it's not draining. The other thing you could do if you don't have a hole in the bottom is you put a container that does have a hole and put that whole thing down in the pot that doesn't have a hole, so it's always up above any water. It's tricky, though.
If you're just joining us, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota answering those lawn and garden questions today. Here is yet another one. What causes rust spots on rhubarb leaves, and what can I do to remedy it?
Oh, yeah, that it can be rust on rhubarb, which is actually a disease. There are a couple of insects as well. Usually that is not a fatal. It's not a big enough problem to need a chemical or a pesticide or anything else to do with it. I would say that if you can make sure your rhubarb is in full sun and spaced far enough apart so you get better air circulation around it. That could help. So you might want to think about transplanting or moving your rhubarb. The other thing would be overhead irrigation, to never have overhead irrigation hit it so that the leaves and the stems are, you keep them as dry as possible.
Mm, okay. Let's take a phone call before we look at that forecast. Catherine calling in from Blaine this morning. Catherine, what's your question for Mary?
Buckthorn, how do I get rid of it? I mean, it's not only one plant. It has spread. What is your best method of getting rid of it?
Well, the best method is to pull it out when it's small. So you remove it, roots and all. If it's so big you can't pull it out or get the roots, then you cut it off. And then you need to, if you don't mind using pesticides, herbicides, you need to put a chemical on it so it doesn't grow again. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to get rid of buckthorn because the seeds will spread. It can resprout from the base if you don't remove the roots. So it is a big project. But you can do this. Persevere and have a certain size area. You can get rid of it. Planting other things so that it doesn't have the light and resources that it needs, that will help also. We do have a lot of information on buckthorn control and the many, many ways you can go at it, but pulling it out is the best solution.
Boy, it's tough stuff. Wow.
Yes.
Tell you what, let's do, Mary. Let's have a look at that forecast, that weather forecast for the rest of this weekend and this coming week. And then we'll have about another half hour of the show to go. Our Smart Garden Show straight ahead here. So stay with us. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming your texts or phone calls for Mary Meyer from the U of M. Here's our number, 651-461-9226. Mary, I want to talk in a moment about what's going on at the Arboretum, but let's grab a phone call. Tony is calling in, I believe, from Minneapolis. Tony, what is your question for Mary? Tony, hello.
Attract cedar waxwings. I saw a bush some years ago when I was parking at a place, and it had cedar waxwings, and they were eating little blue berries.
We missed your question, Tony. What was the first part of it?
Oh, you did? Oh, what kind of shrub could I plant to attract cedar waxwings?
Well, I would start with some of the native viburnum, native dogwood, native aronias, and prunus. There are a lot of, I don't know specifically for that bird without looking it up, but many birds are attracted to viburnums. They're blue viburnums, native viburnums. There are three or four different species. There's also the dogwoods, which are just blooming now, that will have berries that come on them. Aronia is the black chokeberry. There's also a red chokeberry. These are all native shrubs that birds in general like. So it's very likely cedar waxwings will like those. I have seen cedar waxwings on apple trees as well for crab apples. So yes, that's a wonderful thing to be planting shrubs for the birds.
Yeah, for sure. Mary, this is a great time anytime to get to the Arboretum, but it's on days like this or weeks like this, it's just magnificent.
Oh, it's just, yes, magnificent is right. The lilacs are blooming now, which are really, really beautiful. The first peonies are starting to bloom. Those two collections are two of the older collections at the Arboretum. There are hundreds of plants in those two species, and they're certainly beautiful this time of year. The last of the tulips are blooming. This coming week, the tulips will come out, and the annuals will go in. in the big tulip area. The last of the spring ephemerals, the trilliums and so on, are blooming in the wildflower garden. And there's still a few crab apples that are out. Most of the crab apples have finished, but many of them are still out and beautiful. So wonderful to get around. There's also May markets are going on. There are vendors that are out there. There's some new artists. Some really fun artists in the Star Tribune. There was a big article of tiptoeing through the tulips with Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox. So there's some huge new art in the Oswald Visitor Center as well. But wonderful to get out and see all the plants blooming.
You get out there, but you must make reservations online.
Yes, you need reservations. I looked this morning. You could go anytime in half-hour intervals. So the Arboretum is open. I think there are going to be several weddings there this weekend. You might see a bride wandering around in the tulips or
I have
in
seen
the
that
crab
very
apples.
Thing. Yeah, it's always
beautiful
fun.
Beautiful place to visit the Arboretum.
Yeah, get to the Arboretum. Texter wants to know, and this may be something to call your specific city. Their question is, do you know whether communities are pursuing any funding for dead tree removal? Some of our neighbors' landscapes look awful, worse than last year. I would think to contact your forester or whatever.
Right, your city forester, because depending on where the tree is and, yes, what your city is doing, there is actually a lot of federal money that is now available. I know the city of Minneapolis and some of my colleagues at the University of Minnesota got some of the federal money that was allocated for tree planting, especially in urban areas. But yes, your city forester in Plymouth, where I live, the city has a map of ash trees, emerald ash trees. So you can report if you're removing an ash tree, if they're treated ash trees, or where the city is treating or removing trees. So your city forester can help you. And of course, with these dead trees, we always want to think about replanting trees. So for every tree you take out, try to at least plant one in its place.
Good idea. Always a good idea. Phone calls coming in, Mary. Let's grab the first one. Judy is first up. You're calling from Monaga. Judy, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
My question is, I have two apple trees that are just loaded with blossoms. They're absolutely gorgeous. One is a sweet 16, and the other one is a Honeycrisp. And I'm just wondering if I should be plucking some of those blossoms. Is that going to be too much for the tree to handle?
You can try to do that. Many of the trees will self-thin and have what's called a June drop if they have overcommitted to producing too many apples. They really will come off. Commercial growers can sometimes do this tedious work of thinning. They will use chemicals to thin the apples. You can read recommendations about every 4 inches you should have an apple, but not every 2 inches, et cetera, to thin them off. And many trees will go through biennial bearing. So they will have a huge crop this year, which is what's happening with your trees and with my Zestar apple tree. And then next year, you might not have very many. So through pruning mostly pruning, you can hopefully regulate it so that they get into bearing a certain amount, a decent amount every year. That's quite a bit of work.
Thank you, Judy. Let's go to Mora, Minnesota for another phone call. Jeff is calling in this morning. Hi, Jeff. What is your question for Mary?
Yeah, I have a walkout, and I have very steep banks on both sides of the walkout that's really hard to mow. And everything else. I'm wondering what I was thinking about putting, like pollinating plots in there or something like that. What would they recommend for that, and how much is that to be taken care of? Because I know I was going to go to native grasses, and they said it's really hard to keep that because you have to do a lot of weeding and stuff like that. So I was just wondering what you'd recommend.
Yeah, I think I would use some ground covers. If it's really steep and you don't want to worry about mowing it, or you don't need the area to play on or anything, it's so steep, I would use some ground covers. There are some shrubs. The low-grow sumac is a shrub that's nice for difficult areas. And it does have flowers on that bees use. There are other low-growing geranium plants that bees love. So I would try to get a variety of different plants that will cover and hold the area so you don't have to worry about mowing. We have several lists of plants for pollinators on the extension.umn.edu website. And if you can plant things that will flower in the spring, and then summer, and then fall. Some of the asters that will flower in the fall. In midsummer, there are other plants, and then spring flowering ones. So I think I would use plants that have flowers rather than grasses.
Okay. Another text says this, Mary. We will be moving, and I have lots of perennials to move. I have about 100 tulip bulbs. Am I better off starting with fresh bulbs or dig my current bulbs up and move them in the fall?
I would only dig up the tulips if you've got species tulips. Well, these are small tulips, like a foot, usually a foot tall. But the big tulips, the big showy tulips, unless they're really new or have bloomed consistently for you for several years, it's really hard to transplant the large flowered tulips and have them last for many years.
All right, another one. Wondering, texter says, when is the best time to trim and shape a 30-year-old rhododendron? Spring after blooming or fall?
It's spring after blooming. Yeah, 30-year-old rhododendron. So the rhododendron azaleas, they are pretty finicky about pruning. Sometimes if they're a healthy plant and have a lot of stored resources, they will come back from pruning. But other times, so I would not prune off more than one-third of that plant. So leave two-thirds of it there, and gradually over a couple of years, you can reshape it.
Before we do a quick break, let's grab another phone call, Mary. Larry is checking in from Blooming today. Hi, Larry. What is your question, please?
About 5 years ago, I planted two apple trees. One's a McIntosh, which has grown wonderfully. The other one was a Honeycrisp, and that died. I tried again about 2 or 3 years ago, and that just half the branches died. It never did anything, and then last summer, a deer bit it off mercifully at about 2 feet above the ground. I'm wondering what, if it's too late to plant, and what variety would you recommend as a partner trees for cross-pollination? And also, would a flowering crabapple, those pretty ones, would one of those work?
Yes, Larry, a flowering crabapple can work for the pollen to
work.
Yes, Larry, a flowering crabapple can work for the pollen to induce a fruit set on your McIntosh. So you could plant a crabapple. If I was going to plant a new apple tree, I would look for Triumph. Triumph is the new apple specifically for homeowners to grow from the University of Minnesota. It's a disease-resistant apple, and this is the first year, really, it's in garden centers for people to grow. Another one, I really like Zestar. Zestar is a newer introduction from the University of Minnesota, and it fruits early. So it's around state fair time when Zestar is ripe. So good luck with that. Any of those can work.
Very good. Mary, we'll take a quick break. Be right back. Mary Meyer from the U of M is answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show this morning. Coming up next hour, after the news break, Andy Lindis returns with Annie answering any kind of a home improvement question you may have. So get those ready. Keep those in mind for next hour. Right now in the Twin Cities, as far as weather, we have 68 degrees. We're heading for near 82, and those showers pretty much are done. You may see a few stragglers, but we'll have mostly sunny skies here in the Twin Cities, near 82 today, maybe 72 tomorrow. Right now, 68 from News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning and welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long along with Mary Meyer from the U of M. Mary, as usual, our time has flown by so quickly. Let's see how many other folks we can help out here before you take your leave. This texter, Mary, says, I need to move a peony bush which has been in the family for years. When is the best time to move it, and are there any special instructions?
The best time to move peonies is really in the fall. So this is like after August 15th. Peonies have a huge root. This is like get a big bushel basket. It takes a lot to dig up the whole thing. It's difficult to get the whole thing. And then peonies are picky about replanting them. So try to plant them at the same depth they were growing when you took them out. An inch and a half is the ideal bud placement for that, but that's difficult to do. But good luck, and the main thing is you just it's a big root to get out.
Good morning. This texture says, I am a first time raised garden gardener. I'm planning to put tomatoes and peppers in this year. How often do I need to fertilize?
You can use a dry fertilizer, a slow-release fertilizer, or just a regular fertilizer dry. I usually put that in the hole before I'm putting the individual plants in. And that's usually enough. Sometimes, depending on what soil you've got with a raised bed, you can use some liquid fertilizer as a supplement later on. But I normally use a granular or a slow-release fertilizer at the time of planting, and that's usually enough.
Okay. This listener, Mary, has an older, at least 40 years old maple tree, about 35 feet high. It is dead on one side, and we've cut those branches off. Do we need to take the tree down? The other half is flourishing green. It's been this way for years. Should maybe we trim and reshape it? What would you do? Call an arborist, or what do you think?
Yes, you can call an arborist to talk to them. It's probably not going to rejuvenate on that other side. Maples, unfortunately, suffer from stem girdling roots a lot. And we see this as the top part of the tree can die like that. So if you have stem girdling roots on a 40-year-old tree, at this point, there's not much you can do about it. If the shape really displeases you, I would think about planting another replacement tree and then eventually take this one down.
Okay. This listener wants to move, Mary, some ostrich ferns. And their question is, can I do that now or should I wait till fall?
You know, in the fall, they really go dormant, but I have done it both times. Ostrich fern, as long as you get some of that big root system, and they have a rhizome root system, that you'll see that it's about the size of your finger. And as long as you get a big chunk of that, you might want to cut back the fern in half to take off some of the foliage to compensate for the root loss. But you can do it now or in the fall, either time.
This listener, Mary, wants to know if you have any pros or cons with planting bittersweet.
Yeah, you've got to make sure you know what bittersweet you've got, because there's an Oriental bittersweet and then there's an American bittersweet. And so the Oriental one is invasive. There are some places in mostly southern Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota, where there are huge colonies of that, it's a vine-like plant where it really is a problem. So make sure you just have the American bittersweet. You can look that up online. You can see the ways to identify the difference between them.
Just have 2 minutes to go in the show, Mary. Maybe we can grab one more text. This listener would like to plant morning glories and small-sized sunflowers in outdoor pots. What advice do you have?
The morning glory seed can be slow to germinate. You might want to nick that with a knife and soak it before you plant it. Sunflower is very easy to germinate. So, and morning glory tends to be a short day plant, so it often doesn't flower in the long days that we have in the summer. But the sunflower is really easy to grow from seed. And Denny, I wanted to give a little bit more information about the rhubarb. Remember we had a question about the rust on rhubarb?
Right.
So I talked about good air drainage and so on, but another recommendation is to remove any stalks that have those rusty red spots on. Get rid of those because that can reinfect the rest of your plant. You can eat them, but just cut off the parts that are red and then try to clean up your plant in the fall will help it also.
Excellent. Thanks for a follow-up on that one. Get to the Arboretum. Get online. You're going to love the place. And don't forget for some great info, get on the university website, extension.umn.edu. Mary, always a pleasure. I hope we can talk soon.
I hope so, too. Great to talk about gardening, Denny.
Thanks so much. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. He'll be showing up next hour right after the news break. Maybe a few isolated showers, and then they'll get out of here. Mostly sunny skies here in the Twin Cities. Highs near 82. Going to be a beautiful day today. A little breezy, maybe. Gusting as high as 25 miles an hour. For your Sunday, a chance of showers with highs around 77. Right now, 68 on CCO. Please stay with us. Saturday morning to you. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota by Mary Meyer. Mary, good morning.
Good morning, Denny. My gosh, I think it's summer already. Wow.
Instant summer. And boy, did it feel like it yesterday. Fortunately, I guess it wasn't humid and hasn't been. But I tell you, much loved rain. And you and I and our colleagues have for months talked about dormant seeding. By golly, it worked.
Yes, it worked this year. We're certainly glad to see some moisture and warm weather. So as gardeners, it's, should we plant everything we've got already or should we go get more plants at the plant sales and garden centers? So a lot to do if you're a gardener.
Yeah, I'm tempted to get out there today to get some tomatoes and peppers going, but are you going to tell me wait a week or so?
No, I think it's okay to put in your warm season crops now. We've had enough warm weather. I think the soil is warm enough, and yes, so I think you can plant almost anything now. Yep.
Good. That's good news. Yeah. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and if you are a regular listener to the show, you know how busy we tend to get and rapidly filled up with questions. We'd love to hear from you either by phone or by text. Your questions for Mary at 651-461-9226. Here's one that came in a bit ago, Mary. And I remember the questions 2 or 3 weeks ago. We were told, Texter says, we should not be using weed and feed. What should we be doing to control the broadleaf weeds right now?
You can use a weed killer. Depending on how many weeds you have, the temperature has to be right, and it depends on what the product is and the formulation that you have. So you have to really read the label on the bag and determine if there's a temperature requirement for that. So I think the confusion can be also if you're using fertilizer and a weed killer, because most of our turf professors will say, less fertilizer in the spring, more fertilizer in the fall. So if you have a lot of weeds, spring is a good time for controlling weeds. It's not necessarily the best time to be using fertilizer.
All right, good point. This next text might be a good, you may have some idea, but it might be a good candidate for the University of Minnesota website. Good morning, Texter says, looking for some ideas for a landscape that faces southwest but has tilted light, so shaded but hot afternoon sun when it does come through. What do you think of that? I know you get asked questions like that all the time.
Right, yeah. So the limited light and then the southwest exposure, it sounds more like dry but light shade. So there are a number of plants that will work for that. Some of the geraniums or perennial geraniums that will work in lower light conditions. Some of the tougher ground covers like vinca will work in a situation like that. But yes, you're right. We have a lot of recommendations on the extension.umn.edu website where you can get ideas for that. And yeah, so I would also think about some of the native wildflowers that you find along the edges. There's an Canada anemone. That's a very vigorous plant, but you see that in right at the edge of wooded conditions where it's dry. So there are plants that will work. Yep.
All right, great. This listener, Mary, has several oak trees with some dead branches. The texter says, I want to trim these dead branches. I'm concerned about oak leaf wilt. Could I cut these dead branches off if I paint the cuts with pruning sealer?
Well, we really don't recommend any pruning now on oaks. This is when the oak wilt can be transmitted by insects, so it's really a risk. And if the branches are truly dead and you're making the cuts, the insects won't be so attracted to dead wood. But at some point, you're going to hit back where there is live wood and dead. So I would do nothing now. I don't think many arborists are going to be out pruning oaks at this time of year. So the best thing is to wait until the tree is really dormant. Denny, are you there? I can't hear you anymore.
Mary, Denny? I think he disconnected. I think he's trying to connect.
Oh, gosh. We could talk about oak wilt further. That's one of the few plants this time of year really you shouldn't be pruning. Many of our other plants you can still prune, but oaks really, we've had more oak wilt in the area, and although oaks are one of our wonderful plants to grow in our landscapes, and I still plant oaks, they do have a serious issue with oak wilt, so managing them is really critical.
Before we take a break, Mary, wanted to do a shout-out here for the Washington County Extension Master Gardeners having their plant sale today.
Yes.
10 till 3 at the Washington County Fairgrounds. So it's a great day for that. So get out there.
Yes. Hennepin County Master Gardeners are also having their plant sale today. That's in Hopkins. In Hopkins, yes. So Teresa, who's often on the show doing the Smart Garden Show, I am sure she's over there at the Hopkins Pavilion giving advice for folks on plants.
Excellent, and a perfect day for it, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, it is.
Before we break, let me ask you this this text coming in. My lilacs are blooming. Too early?
No, this is a beautiful year for lilacs. Gosh, they're
coming in. My lilacs are blooming. Too early?
No, this is a beautiful year for lilacs. Gosh, they are really gorgeous, fabulous display out at the Arboretum. But the early forms come in now, and then if you plant different species and cultivars of lilacs, you can have lilacs bloom for about 6 weeks. So I have some that are just really in buds and won't bloom for another 2 or 3 weeks. But yes, it's not too early. It's wonderful to enjoy the lilacs.
Excellent. Let's take this quick break, Mary. Be right back with more Smart Garden. Call us or text us with your lawn or garden question at 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830, this is WC. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, talking lawns and gardens. This morning, Mary Meyer from the U of M answering those questions via text or phone. Just call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Mary, speaking of phone calls, let's grab one. Richard, calling in from Pine City, I believe, this morning. Richard, what is your question for Mary?
Well, I kind of got up one day and decided to plant an indoor fruit tree. Now I'm in Pine City, Minnesota, as you said, and I have a big southern window that faces due south. The plant will be right in front of it, if and when. And I would like to know what tree will bear fruit and what will be the easiest to grow. And I guess I'd like to start the tree at 3 feet and not get it more than 5 feet tall.
Well, many people in Minnesota can grow citrus indoors, believe it or not. Yes, lemons, the Meyer lemon, which is not related to me at all, but is one of the sweeter lemons. Limes and then calamondin oranges can be grown as citrus in Minnesota. Most people do put these trees outside in the summertime. But the citrus doesn't need a dormant period. So many of our other fruits like apples, plums, pears, these have to have a dormant period. So that's a difficult thing to mimic the dormant period that happens in the winter time. So you can get citrus plants. I know Bachman's and some of the other garden centers will have citrus plants for sale, especially the Meyer lemon. So my first choice would be a Meyer lemon. These plants do not get very tall. They are three to 5 feet eventually, but they're often just 2 feet tall, and they can easily bear lemons for you. Good luck.
Great idea. Yeah. Thanks for the call, Richard. This texter planted 4 broccoli and 4 cauliflower plants last week. Now some of the leaves have turned orange. Why do you think that is?
Oh, that's the adjustment to the plant getting used to outdoor conditions compared to in the greenhouse where it was growing. So that's just the normal acclimatization of the plants. Sometimes when it's cooler outside than it was in the greenhouse, you'll see red, orange colors in those early transplants. But plants should grow out of it. One way you can prevent that or minimize it is if you use a row cover, the light mesh, usually white row cover material that you can buy. It's like putting a tiny sheet over top of your early transplants. This will help avoid the shock of going outside, and with the brassicas like broccoli and cauliflower, it minimizes the flea beetle damage that these young transplants can often get. But most of the time they grow out of it, and within 10 days or so, they'll look better.
All right. Uh-oh, here's one. My husband has promised to remake my vegetable garden for 2 years now. It may not get done until midsummer. What could I plant, texter wants to know, later in the season as far as vegetables?
Green beans are a pretty short crop, so you can usually plant those later. Amazingly, too, if you plant zucchini or summer squash, like about the 15th of June, the 20th of June, you can often get a crop of those and those squash, and you can avoid the squash vine borer, which will have passed through its first life cycle by that time. Many of the greens like kale, spinach, lettuce, etc., those are short crops and you can get those. The trick kind of is later in the year, it's hard to get those young plants from the garden center. So you might get some seed, start the plants yourself. But even putting the seed out with kale and lettuce, that will work later in the summer.
All right, great. Let's see. This texter says, I have a good-sized concrete planter at my front door, typical New Hope home, and I've had a lot of trouble getting annual flowers to thrive there. Any green, quote, filler-type plant does great, but not flowers. This has been the past 5 years or so. They rot at the dirt level or just shrivel up. Any ideas? I even tried leaving the flowers in plastic pots, sinking them, and they still died.
Wow, that's kind of unusual. So I would say there's something going on with that soil or the planter itself. So there definitely should be holes in the bottom of this. If there are no holes in the bottom, that's a problem. So you need to, the water needs to drain out of it. It sounds like it's just really too wet in there. The other thing, depending on the size of this, is if you can, you can reuse the soil in these planters, if, especially if they're big, but you might want to take the soil out totally in the spring. And that helps to aerate it and keep the compaction from getting so bad. So with big planters, I try to dump them out, mix up the soil. You can put it back in again, but you want to make sure you've got good drainage. It sounds to me like it's not draining. The other thing you could do if you don't have a hole in the bottom is you put a container that does have a hole and put that whole thing down in the pot that doesn't have a hole, so it's always up above any water. It's tricky, though.
If you're just joining us, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota answering those lawn and garden questions today. Here is yet another one. What causes rust spots on rhubarb leaves, and what can I do to remedy it?
Oh, yeah, that it can be rust on rhubarb, which is actually a disease. There are a couple of insects as well. Usually that is not a fatal. It's not a big enough problem to need a chemical or a pesticide or anything else to do with it. I would say that if you can make sure your rhubarb is in full sun and spaced far enough apart so you get better air circulation around it, that could help. So you might want to think about transplanting or moving your rhubarb. The other thing would be overhead irrigation, to never have overhead irrigation hit it so that the leaves and the stems are, you keep them as dry as possible.
Okay. Let's take a phone call before we look at that forecast. Catherine calling in from Blaine this morning. Catherine, what's your question for Mary?
Buckthorn, how do I get rid of it? I mean, it's not only one plant. It has spread. What is your best method of getting rid of it?
Well, the best method is to pull it out when it's small. So you remove it roots and all. If it's so big you can't pull it out or get the roots, then you cut it off. And then you need to, if you don't mind using pesticides, herbicides, you need to put a chemical on it so it doesn't grow again. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of effort to get rid of buckthorn because the seeds will spread. It can resprout from the base if you don't remove the roots. So it is a big project, but you can do this. Persevere and have a certain size area. You can get rid of it. Planting other things so that it doesn't have the light and resources that it needs, that will help also. We do have a lot of information on buckthorn control and the many, many ways you can go at it, but pulling it out is the best solution.
Boy, it's tough stuff. Wow.
Yes.
Tell you what, let's do, Mary. Let's have a look at that forecast, that weather forecast for the rest of this weekend and this coming week. And then we'll have about another half hour of the show to go. Our Smart Garden Show straight ahead here. So stay with us. News Talk 830. This is WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming your texts or phone calls for Mary Meyer from the U of M. Here's our number, 651-461-9226. Mary, I want to talk in a moment about what's going on at the Arboretum, but let's grab a phone call. Tony is calling in, I believe, from Minneapolis. Tony, what is your question for Mary? Tony, hello.
Attract cedar waxwings. I saw a bush some years ago when I was parking at a place, and it had cedar waxwings, and they were eating little blue berries.
We missed your question, Tony. What was the first part of it?
Oh, you did? Oh, what kind of shrub could I plant to attract cedar waxwings?
Well, I would start with some of the native viburnum, native dogwood, native aronias, and prunus. There are a lot of, I don't know specifically for that bird without looking it up, but many birds are attracted to viburnums. They're blue viburnums, native viburnums. There are three or four different species. There's also the dogwoods, which are just blooming now, that will have berries that come on them. Aronia is the black chokeberry. There's also a red chokeberry. These are all native shrubs that birds in general like. So it's very likely cedar waxwings will like those. I have seen cedar waxwings on apple trees as well for crab apples. So yes, that's a wonderful thing to be planting shrubs for the birds.
Yeah, for sure. Mary, this is a great time anytime to get to the Arboretum, but it's and days like this or weeks like this, it's just magnificent.
Oh, it's just, yes, magnificent is right. The lilacs are blooming now, which are really, really beautiful. The first peonies are starting to bloom. Those two collections are two of the older collections at the Arboretum. There are hundreds of plants in those two species, and they're certainly beautiful this time of year. The last of the tulips are blooming. This coming week, the tulips will come out, and the annuals will go in the big tulip area. The last of the spring ephemerals, the trilliums and so on, are blooming in the wildflower garden. And there's still a few crab apples that are out. Most of the crab apples have finished, but many of them are still out and beautiful. So wonderful to get around. There's also May markets are going on. There are vendors that are out there. There's some new artists. Some really fun artists in the Star Tribune. There was a big article of tiptoeing through the tulips with Paul Bunyan and Babe the Blue Ox. So there's some huge new art in the Oswald Visitor Center as well. But wonderful to get out and see all the plants blooming.
You get out there, but you must make reservations online.
Yes, you need reservations. I looked this morning. You could go anytime in half-hour intervals. So the Arboretum is open. I think there are going to be several weddings there this weekend. You might see a bride wandering around in the tulips or
I have seen that very thing. Yeah, it's always
fun. Beautiful place to visit the Arboretum.
Yeah, get to the Arboretum. Texter wants to know, and this may be something to call your specific city. Their question is, do you know whether communities are pursuing any funding for dead tree removal? Some of our neighbors' landscapes look awful, worse than last year. I would think to contact your forester or whatever.
Right, your city forester, because depending on where the tree is and, yes, what your city is doing, there is actually a lot of federal money that is now available. I know the city of Minneapolis and some of my colleagues at the University of Minnesota got some of the federal money that was allocated for tree planting, especially in urban areas. But yes, your city forester in Plymouth, where I live, the city has a map of ash trees, emerald ash trees. So you can report if you're removing an ash tree, if they're treated ash trees, or where the city is treating or removing trees. So your city forester can help you. And of course, with these dead trees, we always want to think about replanting trees. So for every tree you take out, try to at least plant one in its place.
Good idea. Always a good idea. Phone calls coming in, Mary. Let's grab the first one. Judy is first up. You're calling from Monaga. Judy, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
My question is, I have two apple trees that are just loaded with glasses. They're absolutely gorgeous. One is a Sweet 16, and the other one is a Honeycrisp. And I'm just wondering if I should be plucking some of those blossoms. Is that going to be too much for the tree to handle?
You can try to do that. Many of the trees will self-thin and have what's called a June drop if they have overcommitted to producing too many apples. They really will come off. Commercial growers can sometimes do this tedious work of thinning. They will use chemicals to thin the apples. You can read recommendations about every 4 inches you should have an apple, but not every 2 inches, etc., to thin them off. And many trees will go through biennial bearing, so they will have a huge crop this year, which is what's happening with your trees and with my Zestar apple tree. And then next year you might not have very many. So through pruning mostly pruning, you can hopefully regulate it so that they get into bearing a certain amount, a decent amount every year. That's quite a bit of work.
Thank you, Judy. Let's go to Mora, Minnesota for another phone call. Jeff is calling in this morning. Hi, Jeff. What is your question for Mary?
Yeah, I have a walkout, and I have very steep banks on both sides of the walkout that's really hard to mow. And everything else. I'm wondering what I was thinking about putting, like pollinating plots in there or something like that. What would they recommend for that, and how much is that to be taken care of? Because I know I was going to go to native grasses, and they said it's really hard to keep that because you have to do a lot of weeding and stuff like that. So I was just wondering what you'd recommend.
Yeah, I think I would use some ground covers. If it's really steep and you don't want to worry about mowing it, or you don't need the area to play on or anything, it's so steep, I would use some ground covers. There are some shrubs. The low-grow sumac is a shrub that's nice for difficult areas. And it does have flowers on that bees use. There are other low-growing geranium plants that bees love. So I would try to get a variety of different plants that will cover and hold the area so you don't have to worry about mowing. We have several lists of plants for pollinators on the extension.umn.edu website. And if you can plant things that will flower in the spring, and then summer, and then fall. Some of the asters that will flower in the fall. In midsummer, there are other plants, and then spring flowering ones. So I think I would use plants that have flowers rather than grasses.
Okay. Another text says this, Mary. We will be moving, and I have lots of perennials to move. I have about 100 tulip bulbs. Am I better off starting with fresh bulbs or dig my current bulbs up and move them in the fall?
I would only dig up the tulips if you've got species tulips. Well, these are small tulips, like a foot, usually a foot tall. And but the big tulips, the big showy tulips, unless they're really new or have bloomed consistently for you for several years, it's really hard to transplant the large flowered tulips and have them last for many years.
All right. Another one wondering, texter says, when is the best time to trim and shape a 30-year-old rhododendron, spring after blooming or fall?
It's spring after blooming. Yeah, 30-year-old rhododendron. So the rhododendron azaleas, they are pretty finicky about pruning. Sometimes if they're a healthy plant and have a lot of stored resources, they will come back from pruning. But other times, so I would not prune off more than one-third of that plant. So leave two-thirds of it there, and gradually over a couple of years, you can reshape it.
Before we do a quick break, let's grab another phone call, Mary. Larry is checking in from Blooming Today. Hi, Larry. What is your question, please?
About 5 years ago, I planted two apple trees. One's a Macintosh, which has grown wonderfully. The other one was a Honeycrisp, and that died. I tried again about 2 or 3 years ago, and that just half the branches died. It never did anything, and then last summer a deer bit it off mercifully at about 2 feet above the ground. I'm wondering what, if it's too late to plant, and what variety would you recommend as a partner trees for cross-pollination? And also, would a flowering crabapple, those pretty ones, would one of those work?
Yes, Larry, a flowering crabapple can work for the pollen to
work.
Yes, Larry, a flowering crabapple can work for the pollen to to induce a fruit set on your Macintosh. So you could plant a crabapple. If I was going to plant a new apple tree, I would look for Triumph. Triumph is the new apple specifically for homeowners to grow from the University of Minnesota. It's a disease-resistant apple, and this is the first year, really, it's in garden centers for people to grow. Another one, I really like Zestar. Zestar is a newer introduction from the University of Minnesota, and it fruits early. So it's around state fair time when Zestar is ripe. So good luck with that. Any of those can work.
Very good. Mary, we'll take a quick break. Be right back. Mary Meyer from the U of M is answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show this morning. Coming up next hour, after the news break, Andy Lindis returns with Annie answering any kind of a home improvement question you may have. So get those ready. Keep those in mind for next hour. Right now in the Twin Cities, as far as weather, we have 68 degrees. We're heading for near 82, and those showers pretty much are done. You may see a few stragglers, but we'll have mostly sunny skies here in the Twin Cities, near 82 today, maybe 72 tomorrow. Right now, 68 from News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning and welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on 830 WCCO. Denny Long along with Mary Meyer from the U of M. Mary, as usual, our time has flown by so quickly. Let's see how many other folks we can help out here before you take your leave. This texter, Mary, says, I need to move a peony bush which has been in the family for years. When is the best time to move it, and are there any special instructions?
The best time to move peonies is really in the fall. So this is like after August 15th. Peonies have a huge root. This is like get a big bushel basket. It takes a lot to dig up the whole thing. It's difficult to get the whole thing. And then peonies are picky about replanting them. So try to plant them at the same depth they were growing when you took them out. An inch and a half is the ideal bud placement for that, but that's difficult to do. But good luck, and the main thing is you just it's a big root to get out.
Good morning. This texter says, I am a first time raised garden gardener. I'm planning to put tomatoes and peppers in this year. How often do I need to fertilize?
You can use a dry fertilizer, a slow-release fertilizer, or just a regular fertilizer dry. I usually put that in the hole before I'm putting the individual plants in. And that's usually enough. Sometimes, depending on what soil you've got with a raised bed, you can use some liquid fertilizer as a supplement later on. But I normally use a granular or a slow-release fertilizer at the time of planting, and that's usually enough.
Okay. This listener, Mary, has an older, at least 40 years old maple tree, about 35 feet high. It is dead on one side, and we've cut those branches off. Do we need to take the tree down? The other half is flourishing green. It's been this way for years. Should maybe we trim and reshape it? What would you do? Call an arborist, or what do you think?
Yes, you can call an arborist to talk to them. It's probably not going to rejuvenate on that other side. Maples, unfortunately, have suffer from stem girdling roots a lot. And we see this as the top part of the tree can die like that. So if you have stem girdling roots on a 40-year-old tree, at this point, there's not much you can do about it. If the shape really displeases you, I would think about planting another replacement tree and then eventually take this one down.
Okay. This listener wants to move, Mary, some ostrich ferns, and their question is, can I do that now or should I wait till fall?
You know, in the fall, they really go dormant, but I have done it both times. Ostrich fern, as long as you get some of that big root system, and they have a rhizome root system, that you'll see that it's about the size of your finger. And as long as you get a big chunk of that, you might want to cut back the fern in half to take off some of the foliage to compensate for the root loss. But you can do it now or in the fall, either time.
This listener, Mary, wants to know if you have any pros or cons with planting bittersweet.
Yeah, you've got to make sure you know what bittersweet you've got, because there's an Oriental bittersweet and then there's an American bittersweet. And so the Oriental one is invasive. There are some places in mostly southern Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota, where there are huge colonies of that, you know, it's a vine-like plant where it really is a problem. So make sure you just have the American bittersweet. You can look that up online. You can see the ways to identify the difference between them.
Just have 2 minutes to go in the show, Mary. Maybe we can grab one more text. This listener would like to plant more morning glories and small-sized sunflowers in outdoor pots. What advice do you have?
The morning glory seed can be slow to germinate. You might want to nick that with a knife and soak it before you plant it. Sunflower is very easy to germinate. So, morning glory tends to be a short day plant, so it often doesn't flower in the long days that we have in the summer. But the sunflower is really easy to grow from seed. And Denny, I wanted to give a little bit more information about the rhubarb. Remember, we had a question about the rust on rhubarb.
Right.
So I talked about good air drainage and so on, but another recommendation is to remove any stalks that have those rusty red spots on. Get rid of those, because that can reinfect the rest of your plant. You can eat them, but just cut off the parts that are red, and then try to clean up your plant in the fall will help it also.
Excellent. Thanks for a follow-up on that one. Get to the Arboretum. Get online. You're going to love the place. And don't forget, for some great info, get on the university website, extension.umn.edu. Mary, always a pleasure. I hope we can talk soon.
I hope so, too. Great to talk about gardening, Denny.
Thanks so much. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis. He'll be showing up next hour right after the news break. Maybe a few isolated showers and then they'll get out of here. Mostly sunny skies here in the Twin Cities. Highs near 82. Going to be a beautiful day today. A little breezy maybe, gusting as high as 25 miles an hour. For your Sunday, a chance of showers with highs around 77. Right now, 68 on CCO. Please stay with us.